part of my reason for just engaging you with a few questions there is one sort of hindrance to these practices or obstacles that can emerge in any sort of practice where you're trying to cultivate something is the expectation that we should be cultivating something. And it's kind of a tricky thing because obviously we have to have a goal of cultivating, but it's almost false advertising when the meditation's called compassion for a loved one, because often what we're experiencing is not compassion, in my experience. I remember first during this practice, I really jumped in pretty deep with the practices because I was like, I'm going to be teaching this stuff. And often with this practice, I don't feel anything really. It's like, and these are like my, what is Thupten Jinpa says, pick someone easy and uncomplicated, whatever that means. but for me, the juices get flowing. If I think of my kids, it's like toddlers kind of thing. Yeah. But then sometimes there's nothing there. Like it feels, and I'll present you a model in a week or two of various sort of things that can happen, experiences, and one of which is sort of this, it doesn't feel like anything's happening, which is fine. But that can trigger my judging mind. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing this right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I should be feeling compassion.
But that's judging of yourself rather than judging someone else.
Right, but
then my stop judging, period.
And so this is going to roll right into self-compassion, yeah, right, in a sense. But it's really a hindrance to meditating, particularly these cultivation practices, if we think we should be experiencing something. There's a book by I've been sort of playing around with this idea for a while, and you know, I hear it a lot from meditation teachers, but it was very clearly articulated by a book called Wake Up to Your Life by Ken MacLeod. I'm just trying to put a reference there, not suggesting you read it. It's very, very Buddhist. But he talks about this issue in terms of meditation, and he distinguishes between effects and results. Mm-hmm. Result is what we want. Like, for instance, in a compassion class, most of us want to be more compassionate. The effect is what happens when we're engaging in the practices that are intended to produce that result. And the effects are often not what we think the result should be. So, for instance, he gives talk about the brain and the judging mind. I just came up from all these work emails and meetings with my boss, so like part of my brain's still there. If I have a goal of becoming physically fit, for instance, I might set a goal of, say, running a half marathon or something, whatever the goal is. So I set in motion a particular plan. So I go out my first day, I'm not in shape, and I start running. And I don't make it very far, and then I feel really bad, perhaps. I might have sore muscles, I might get winded. And then every day is kind of like that. There's a particular effect. And some days I might feel energized, but every day the effect is different, or possibly different. But it's not the effect is not necessarily feeling physically fit. But then perhaps, like, I don't know, a month, 2 months later, one day I feel like, wow, I feel better. Like I feel like I'm achieving this goal. And he uses that as a kind of an example of what meditation is like. And I sometimes say these practices are doing something under the surface. So I'm sort of presenting this to you because one of the hindrances to engaging in practice, and particularly these practices where we're cultivating something, is that we can feel like we're not getting there in the practice, in the 20 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever. And so I'm trying to like push you a little bit to stick with it and don't gauge the worth of the practice in terms of one time, but let results emerge. And typically, often at least, when they emerge, it's not in the practice, it's in daily life. Sharon Salzberg, feel like I'm promoting her or something. She doesn't need promoting. Maybe I'll get a little royalties from her. She, if you buy her books, tell her that you got the idea from me. She gives this example of working with self-loving kindness practice. She really wanted to do that. She'd been teaching meditation for a while and like engaged in like a 1-month retreat or something, and really felt like nothing is happening. I'm just like sitting there basically, saying, may I be free from suffering, may I be happy, that kind of thing. And then she was somewhere giving a talk, I think at the Insight Meditation Center, and dropped something. I think it was a vase, like in front of a large group of people, and it shattered. And she noticed in that moment that her normal self-talk would have been, Sharon, you're such a klutz. Sharon, you always do this. What's wrong with you kind of talk. And instead, in the moment, she kind of laughed at herself. And then the other kind of talk was still there, but it didn't overcome her. And that's my experience with these practices, is that, it's possible to have like this heart-opening, wonderful experience, but more often than not, the results that emerge are in sort of little ways. For instance, we'll be working with expanding our compassion in a few weeks to outside of our comfort zones. And that might not feel like I'm really getting somewhere when I'm doing the practice. I'm not really feeling compassion for this difficult person in the practice. But then at work, the person who irritated me might come into my office, or I might encounter that person, and I might notice that in the moment I'm not as aggravated or something like that. So, yeah. So I'm encouraging you to just stick with whatever commitment you can make during these 8 weeks and let the results emerge, and don't put pressure on yourself to be experiencing a particular thing. Mm-hmm. And so in the practices, it's really important to do the practice and just be with what's there and not evaluate whether you're doing it correctly or not. In terms of self-compassion, it's really interesting. It's a really interesting subject. It just kind of popped on the scene maybe 10 years ago. I had a lot of skepticism about it, and I think in Buddhist circles it was looked on skeptically, I believe. But now it's sort of emerged as a legitimate sort of a need, to put it in a certain way, that we have in the modern world, the Western world. Again, Sharon Salzberg. At the very first, His Holiness the Dalai Lama arranges these conferences with meditators and scientists. Started in, I think, 90s, and at the very first sort of Mind and Life, whatever they called them, dialogues, Sharon Salzberg, I think, is the one who asked His Holiness, what about self-hatred or this self-denigration? And he was just totally baffled by the question. And I think since then, there's been just more and more exploration of what we need as Westerners, modern people. Thupten Jinpa tells a story in this curriculum. I don't remember the details, but self-compassion wasn't as important part of the curriculum when they first designed it. It might not have been there at all, or if it was, it was kind of an add-on, and they found that people struggled with it and people needed it. And that's my experience. The first time I went through the curriculum, there's people in my sort of CCT cohort, some of whom had already been teaching meditation for years. I was kind of like awed by some of these people, and which kicked in my own sort of self-criticism often. But in a group like this, exploring the self-compassion practice, I was really aware that I had avoided the practice because other of my colleagues were talking about the challenges they had with it, the benefits, and that was kind of eye-opening to me, like, what was that about? And I realized I had a lot of resistance to self-compassion and still do. So I had to learn just to be with the practice for a while. And it, for me, you, going back to that example I gave earlier, I didn't feel anything for a long time in the self-compassion practice.
I was carefully taught to hate myself.
Yeah.
My mother was abusive. And in a different way, I almost died one time. But what I want to talk about is that she often told me,